I just don't see the Chinese doing that. They don't believe it's in their interest, and I think they're probably right.
China seen as key in dealing with North Korea. It's Friday, April 28th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us online, too, for Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, a Vietnamese perspective of President Trump's first 100 days. Press freedom is under siege. We meet an Asian American activist. The technology of wood. We're just getting started. Stay with us for VOA Asia. One of the key messages coming out of President Donald Trump's meeting with U.S. lawmakers on North Korea was a renewed emphasis on the need to use sanctions and diplomacy to try to pressure Pyongyang back to the negotiating table. While the outlook for the resumption of talks remains bleak at best, according to analysts, China's support in that effort is key. How far Beijing is prepared to go to tighten the screws and support that effort is a big question. Analysts in China say the government is already doing all it can to keep the North in check. China cut coal imports from North Korea earlier this year and has been tightening financial flows to the North. Liu Chao, a North Korea scholar at the Liaoning Academy of Social Sciences in northeast China, says all Chinese banks have stopped banking with their North Korean counterparts. He says China has imposed the harshest sanctions ever against North Korea, the effect of which may take some time to kick in, but they will be effective. China has long been seen as one of North Korea's closest allies, but relations have taken a downturn since Kim Jong-un came to power. He has carried out 3 nuclear tests and more than a dozen missile launches. Military analysts say another nuclear test could be held soon. Unlike his father, Kim Jong-un has not visited China, which is definitely dissatisfied with North Korea's behavior, but it's not likely to take any extraordinary measures, says Daniel Pinkston, Northeast Asia security analyst and lecturer in international relations with Troy University in Seoul.
As far as causing the types of strains and stresses that could destabilize North Korea and lead to some revolutionary change or toppling of the government or anything like that, I just don't see the Chinese doing that. They don't believe it's in their interest, and I think they're probably right.
In recent state media editorials, China has sent strong signals to its northeastern neighbor, warning that if any country risks war, they will have to assume the responsibility of history, notes Byung-Yong Shik of the Yonsei University Institute for North Korean Studies in Seoul.
That's a very strong warning to Pyongyang, to warn Pyongyang not to engage in any outright provocations that will be perceived by the United States as North Korea has crossed the red line.
The impetus now is that China feels it has to deliver something to maintain its relationship with the United States, says Yuan Graham, director of the International Security Program at the Lowy Institute for International Policy in Sydney, Australia.
These editorials that we're seeing also reflect the problem that there isn't really a handler of the relationship on the North Korean side anymore. There's no central personality like Jang Song-taek, who for many years was the main channel. So it's not as easy. I mean, the Chinese, I think, have genuine frustrations.
Many analysts have noted the shift in Beijing's tactic and how it has softened its criticism of Washington and gotten tougher on Pyongyang. Our thanks to VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide for sharing this report. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. China eyes tighter sanctions on North Korea, but limits remain. Accelerated THAAD deployment dividing South Korean presidential candidates. Hong Kong widens crackdown, arrests 9 more activists. India shuts down social media in Indian Kashmir to stern protests. United Nations records 54% rise in war-related deaths of Afghan women. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. President Donald Trump is now completing his first 100 days of his presidency, and although President Trump has tweeted he feels that the time period is very arbitrary, it is watched closely by many in the United States as an early report card of how the new president is doing. The first 100 days have also been watched closely around the world, including in Vietnam, where Vietnamese reporter Trung Nguyen spoke via Facebook Live with two residents there on their thoughts of President Trump, and he shares his findings with VOA Asia's Steve Miller.
This morning, I did a Facebook Live outside the White House, and we invited two Vietnamese Americans who worked closely with the community to ask them their thoughts on President Trump's 100th day. And mixed reaction, actually. They praised him in one area and they have some negative things to say to him.
Let's start with the good things. What did they say that he's done well in these first 100 days?
The good thing is that he appointed the Supreme Court judge. That will be his legacy. He also a quick learner who issued executive orders and policies. But then when he faced with difficulties in Congress or with something like that, he readjusts.
On the flip side of the coin, things that they think that he didn't do so well.
Both of them told me that some of the decisions, in their opinion, were made a little bit rash.
So too hastily.
Yes.
Did they give any examples?
They talk about the travel ban. One of the experts or the community leaders I talked to work with refugees, Vietnamese refugees. He criticized President Trump for that travel ban that actually stopped a few Vietnamese who were seeking refugees in Bangkok from leaving Thailand for the U.S., even though they were granted permission to come to the U.S. because of that travel ban. So that one of the negative thing about President Trump's 100 day.
So if we take a look at President Trump, his overall approval rating by some polls is very low for a president during this time period. Are they at all concerned about his approval rating and the job that he's doing?
They were, actually. They also talk about the ratings, the low ratings that President Trump is receiving. And at the end of the interview, I asked them to grade President Trump's and his administration's in 100 days. And one of them gave him 4 out of 10,
mm-hmm.
and one gave him 3 out of 10.
Oh, that's very, very low.
Very, very low.
What was
positive side is that they all said that President Trump originally is a businessman who has a business-minded thinking, so he will learn from his mistake and make a better decision. So hopefully when I talk to them in the future, they wouldn't give him higher mark.
Well, I'm really curious. I mean, you have 3 out of 10, 4 out of 10. What was the rationale for scoring that low?
It's below average for Vietnamese. We rank at school, 10 is the maximum that anyone can get. And under 5 is quite low. It's below average.
In their opinion, below average performance for President Trump. As we move into the next phase of his presidency, do they have anything specific that they would like to see the president achieve moving forward, whether it be the next 100 days or the next 6 months or the next year?
We broadcast to Vietnamese audience, so of course I talk to them about Vietnam-related issues like the South China Sea or the president's upcoming visit to Vietnam in November to attend APEC summit in Da Nang, which is a city in central Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And they hope that President Trump will make more case for the human rights situation in Vietnam. And they hope that he will be more forceful in urging the government in Vietnam to do more to improve the human rights situation and basic freedoms that the Vietnamese are having today.
Trung Nguyen is with our Vietnamese service. Thank you so much for stopping by today.
You are always welcome.
Happening now in Asia, China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi urged the United States and South Korea to end joint military exercises. He also encouraged North Korea to stop its nuclear program. However, North Korea released a video of simulated missile attacks on the White House and U.S. aircraft carriers. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Always very happy to have you with us on VOA Asia. Thank you so much for listening with us today. A media rights watchdog group is warning that over the past year, global press freedom has, in its words, quote, never been so threatened. VOA's Bill Gallo has details, beginning with the biggest offenders, according to the group.
The worst offender? North Korea, where listening to a foreign radio broadcast can lead to a sentence in a political prison camp. In Syria, a ruthless dictator fighting jihadi and other rebels make that country the world's deadliest for journalists.
The world press freedom map is getting darker and darker.
Overall, nearly two-thirds of the countries measured by Reporters Without Borders saw a deterioration of media freedom in 2016. Nowhere was that trend more apparent than in Bahrain, where government critics are often jailed and protesters stifled. Bahrain, along with Egypt, led by authoritarian leader Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, both fell to the group's lowest press freedom ranking.
I'm not going to give you a question. You are fake news.
Sir,
go ahead.
The U.S. plunged two spots, thanks in part to President Donald Trump's constant media bashing, which, RSF says, emboldened other countries to mistreat their own media.
This hate speech contributed to disinhibit attacks on the media almost everywhere in the world, including in democratic countries.
The Press Freedom Index is released yearly. It looks at factors such as media independence and levels of abuse. If there's any question that such reports do any good, just ask journalist Errol Undaragnu, who's facing charges in Turkey for supporting a pro-Kurdish newspaper.
I was kept 10 days waiting for my indictment, and I should say that it was the time where international and national civil society organization pressure was important and taken to account.
Tom Malinowski, a former State Department official, says it's crucial that pressure continue.
Everybody cares about their reputation. Dictators are more insecure about their reputation than Democrats are, because a democratically elected leader of a democratic country has no reason to be insecure.
But if the latest report is any indication, even some democratic countries continue to fall short. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Washington.
Well, we continue the long tradition of reaching areas that are tough to get for free media, and we're very happy that you're listening with us at VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news alert from VOA Asia, Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte says ASEAN leaders wasted their time discussing the 2016 Arbitral Award it won against Beijing regarding the South China Sea. Duterte has been accused by members of the previous administration of taking a defeatist position on China. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue now with VOA Asia, as we also continue our series on Asians in America, their lives and experiences after coming to the United States. Jun Lin was born in the United States, but went to Taiwan with her family at a very young age. She returned just over a year ago and is in Washington, D.C., where Lin is currently a policy associate at FAPA, an advocacy organization working to promote Taiwan's, quote, right to self-determination. Jun Lin was inspired to inform members of Congress about Taiwanese affairs after being a part of the Sunflower Movement, during which students took over Taiwan's legislative houses for 21 days. VOA Asia's Ali Ogden spoke with her on Facebook Live yesterday. Here's an excerpt as Lin tells us her story.
The reason that I think Washington, D.C. is important because all the policymakers that might have influence on the international relations of Taiwan are here. Mm-hmm. And also, this is a place where all the people that care about international politics and probably international advocacies gathered here. Mm-hmm. So it's not only just about Taiwan, but I'm also thrilled to get to know how things work in DC and how people from how advocates from other country work in DC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So are you going to Congress? Is that part of your
Yeah, we do congressional visits to visit the foreign affairs aides of congressmen and try to get them to know about the issue of Taiwan or some of the resolution that we are trying to promote.
In terms of your background, you know, what got you into this? What inspired you?
You mean all the politics stuff?
Or just, sure, anything that, any experience you had in your background that inspired you or motivated you to get involved and become an activist?
Well, it was mainly the Sunflower Movement that took place in 2014. So before that, I was studying my bachelor degree in business school, which mm-hmm. has nothing related to social issues and politics. But so in 2014, the Sunflower Movement took place, and me and other student activists occupied the Legislative Yuan, which is the Congress of Taiwan, for 21 days, and which is a really extraordinary experience because we were fighting for certain values and democracy of Taiwan, and that to see all that, to witness all that happen and see all the other young activists who is so determined to enhance the democracy of Taiwan, it's just really inspiring. So after that, I decided to devote myself into advocacies.
So going back to Washington, was that experience in the Sunflower Movement a big starting point for you, for what
yes.
you do?
That's when I decided to both change my academic focus into political science, mm-hmm. and also I want to do more for the democracy of Taiwan.
Ali Ogden's entire interview with June Lin may be seen on VOA Asia Facebook. Our thanks to June Lin for speaking with us. Developing at this hour in Asia, sources say a suspected U.S. drone strike killed several Pakistani Taliban militants in North Waziristan, close to the Afghanistan border, in a rare strike on Pakistani soil. If confirmed, it would be only the second drone attack inside Pakistan since President Donald Trump took office. VOA Asia keeps you informed on Facebook at VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, wood is usually not associated with water filters and even less with electronic devices. VOA's George Pudich, though, reports that scientists at the University of Maryland say we've not yet discovered all the possibilities of this cheap, natural, and sustainable material.
Wood has many unique properties, and one of them is the natural longitudinal arrangement of channels through which a tree moves water from the ground. Turns out these channels could be useful in building advanced electronic devices.
The natural made channels in wood enable us to infiltrate the electrical material inside, no matter what size the electrode. The carbonized wood structure can be very conductive, and the electrons can transfer very fast.
Chen is using carbonized wood to build supercapacitors, a new type of energy storage device that could quickly store and release energy from regenerative brakes in electric cars.
This method can be scalable.
This method can be scalable with many pieces of wood stacked together, which promises low-cost, biodegradable energy storage.
The researchers also discovered that carbonized wood can help solve problems that often lead to the failure of lithium metal batteries. To work, the wood electrode has to be soaked with liquid lithium.
By using the wood porous structure.
By using wood's porous structure, we can accommodate the lithium metal inside the porous structure to inhibit lithium dendritic growth and the volume change.
Also, wood treated with palladium nanoparticles can be used for cheap and effective wastewater treatment. Here, a wood membrane removes a carcinogenic dye called methylene blue with more than 99% efficiency.
The catalyst of palladium nanoparticles.
The nanopalladium catalyst takes effect, and the blue solution turns into colorless water.
As most of types of wood have straight channel structure, researchers say using this natural material could substantially cut the price of future electronic devices. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
Well, rain did not stop dozens of activists from gathering here in Washington on a recent Friday to rally against childhood vaccines. They want President Trump to establish a committee to look into vaccine safety. VOA's Carol Pearson spoke to the activists and to some of the world's top doctors about vaccine safety.
Anti-vaccine activists endured a cold, rainy day in Washington to make their point.
As parents, it's our decision whether or not we want to vaccinate.
The movement has gained so much momentum that doctors like Peter Hotez are alarmed. Hotez works on vaccines at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas.
We now in the state of Texas have 50,000 kids whose parents are opting them out of getting vaccinated.
The activists say that's because vaccines can cause everything from autism to severe allergies. But Dr. Anthony Fauci says that is not true. Fauci heads the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases and has seen firsthand the effectiveness of vaccines.
Occasionally there's an adverse reaction, but it is so rare that it's to be almost unmeasurable.
And any side effects are usually minor, says Dr. Linda Fu, a pediatrician at Children's National Medical Center in Washington.
The most common side effects to any of the vaccines are pain at the injection site and fever for 24 to 48 hours.
Still, anti-vaccine activists like Irene Pai are convinced that harmful ingredients are added to vaccines.
Bovine cells, pig, sheep, monkey, dog. These cells are not meant to be injected into the human body.
Again, the science says otherwise. Dr. Fu has a specialty in immunizations.
The vaccines that the children are getting today are very much more pure and are very safe and effective.
So effective that Dr. Flavia Bustrea with the World Health Organization says young people have no memory of how harmful some of these diseases are.
Currently, if you speak with any young mother or young father in Italy, where I come from, they don't know diphtheria. They've never seen it. They don't know that, you know, you can lose your child from diphtheria.
The World Health Organization has an online site to help parents find reliable information on vaccine safety. The CDC does the same. Still, Fauci says talking it over is best.
I think that there will be a certain number of people, a certain percentage of people, who no matter what you say to convince them with evidence, they're not going to be convinced. But I think the approach towards people who are anti-vaccinated is to respect their opinion and don't denigrate them and don't criticize them, but try to explain to them on the basis of solid evidence why the risk-benefit of vaccines clearly favors very, very heavily in towards vaccinating your children.
And that's why Dr. Peter Hotez says scientists have to take some time away from their laboratories and talk to people about vaccines. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We have many ways for you to find our program. Two of the ways that are very popular are through iTunes and SoundCloud. We're, of course, at voanews.com. That's our website where we stream every day. And also on Facebook at VOA Asia. We're also a podcast. You can download the program and take VOA Asia wherever you go. We'd like to thank all of our listeners in Myanmar for joining us today on VOA Burmese Facebook. Thank you so much. Thanks, too, to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. Our managing editor is Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team includes Steve Miller and Ali Ogden. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a super day ahead.